Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And as always, it's so good to have you back here in the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, and our crew has discovered something really exciting today. There's a global humanitarian technology conference going on in Seattle, of all places, coming up. Now, listen to that, chew on that for a minute. Global Humanitarian Technology Conference. Yeah, a bunch of scientists getting together and solving the world's problems through technology. And we're going to hear from Paul Kostick. He's the chairman of the Global Technology Conference to be held in Seattle. And he's going to give us a good overview. And then in the second half hour, Keith Moore, who's the technical program chair. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers. What today? Socrates? Socrates? Speaking in English, no less? How'd you guys do that? All right, and we're going to visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, we want to check in with Paul Kostick. We reached him at his home in Seattle, Washington.
Stand by.
Well, right now, it's my pleasure, and I'm honored to introduce to you Paul Kostick. If the name sounds familiar, Paul's appeared on TV, The Lou Dobbs Show, CNBC, local news programs in Seattle and Detroit, and has done interviews in publications such as Business Week and The Wall Street Journal. Even testified before Congress, and we're going to ask him a little bit about that later on in the interview. Paul has so many credits. It's hard to cover right at the moment, but he's past president of IEEE USA and a member of the IEEE Board of Directors, chaired the American Association of Engineering Societies in 2003, and a distinguished lecturer. So we're very honored to have Paul with us. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Colonel. Nice to be here.
Now, this event coming up in Seattle really has us intrigued, because it's known as the IEEE 2011 Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, and it's going to be held in Seattle. And how does this work? I mean, IEEE is an engineers association, I believe. You know, we've covered that a lot on this program. And a global humanitarian, but technology conference. Now, what is the gist of this?
Well, IEEE has been involved in the whole area of what's called humanitarian technology. And when we talk about humanitarian technology, we're really looking at developing and emerging nations, people who have limited access to power, mm-hmm. limited access to data connectivity, healthcare, clean water. And several years ago, part of the IEEE started an initiative to create projects to help develop power for folks who are off the grid,
whether
it be solar, hydropower, wind power, mm-hmm. ways to improve data connectivity, and ways to improve access to healthcare records. And so we've had this going on activity-wise in Africa, Asia, South America over the last 4 years. And the decision was really made last year by several folks here in Seattle that we really needed to start to bring people together to talk more, not just the technology side. I think the engineers can come up with the solutions, but also bring together the users, people from non-government organizations, from government, from academia, and from industry, to really talk about what are the needs that are out there for technology. Are we taking the right approaches in terms of how we implement technology? And really there the topic is, how do you get ownership in a community? There's lots of great groups going out doing incredible work, especially a lot of students during their summer vacations, mm-hmm. spending time developing projects. But the local community doesn't always have a sense of ownership. And if something goes wrong or a component fails and the system starts working, frequently everyone just sits and says, well, the students will be back next year. So we wanted to bring a group together to figure out not just a technology perspective of what technologies are needed, what are the opportunities out there, but also how do we make this all work so that we're improving the total quality of life for people. I think water is the most interesting topic that gets brought into this conference. About 1 billion people in the world do not have access every day to clean water. So you have the health issues, obviously, if you don't have access to clean water. But the other challenge is, and it's typically the women who have to do this, they have to spend a considerable amount of time every day going off to collect water, bringing it back, preparing the family meals, cooking, cleaning, and then maybe going back for a second trip. If we can improve the access to water, then you actually have a resource. Now you have an opportunity for women to maybe go create a business, create new opportunities for themselves and for their families. And obviously the power side of the thing is the same type of story. If you can create power in a village or in a small town, you now provide an opportunity that there is life after the sunset, opportunities for kids to study, people to charge their cell phones, people to increase the use of computers, because again, they have power and are able to charge and use their things. So the conference is really intended to bring a global community together, hence the name, to talk not just about the technology, but how all of it fits together within a society and a culture, and even the entrepreneurial side of how does one take some of this and create business opportunities for people.
Well, I would suggest, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you want to solve the water problem, you've got to solve the power problem first, because you have to clean the water, you got to pump the water, you have to do all those sorts of things. And are you trying to say that there's a way of solving the water problem without first solving the power problem?
Well, I think they all fit together. I mean, some of it is an access question for the water. You obviously need power to do some of the cleaning, but there are some other technologies in development that will provide clean water. Just think about the filter systems people buy in the developed world to run through tap water. We're thinking of taking those types of systems and expanding them for use in a village, so that where you now have an opportunity to provide clean, safe water to people that's much more closer versus having to travel further to get access to the water. And then obviously the power fits hand in hand and all of that. And that's kind of what the discussion is really about at the conference, is to find ways to talk this whole conversation of what's the best approaches that are being taken in some cases and others may not even be aware of what that's going on, and also identify new opportunities that we really should be approaching that maybe nobody's thought about before.
All right, well, this Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, this is an inaugural conference, I think, isn't it? And participants from technology and NGOs and non-government organizations and businesses and all sorts of different people are going to be involved. Could you drill down for us a little bit, tell us what can be expected? And incidentally, is the public invited, or is this closed to just the pointy heads?
No, this conference is open to anyone. It's, open to IEEE members, be they engineers, computer scientists, mathematicians, but it's also open to any member of the public who is interested in this topic. And I've heard from a lot of folks, kind of a wide spectrum, students who are either looking to do projects while they're still in school or getting ready to graduate and want to take a different approach to things before they go off into a regular employment. Got also folks who are retiring and now looking to be involved in different types of projects, but this conference is open to anyone. We've had a lot of interest from not just college students, but also high school students. The whole objective of bringing this group together this very first time out is because there are so many projects going on in the world and frequently so many different types of events that don't necessarily bring the common communities with a common interest together, we really see this conference as an opportunity for people to come and really share the work that they've got going on, bring forward problems they may be dealing with, whether they be technology or other types of problems that they're trying to work through, and also just an opportunity for even people interested from the business side to look at, are there business opportunities that can be created? So over the 2+ days of the conference, what will happen is there will be some keynotes from folks from UNESCO, from Qualcomm, from NASA. And the folks at NASA will be actually talking a lot about the work they do in global world observation. I think that's one of the big topics. If we look at things like the tsunami that took place in Japan, mm-hmm. or the one that hit Southeast Asia a few years ago,
yeah.
Adequate warning systems are a critical thing in protecting lives. So this is an important discussion that takes place. It's also Earth observation is looking at agricultural development in the world and how that impacts people's lives. So we're trying to bring together as many diverse opinions, backgrounds, experience. We're trying to bring people in who are very pro-technology being introduced in the developing world, but we're also bringing in some folks who are putting up their hands a bit to say, is technology totally the answer, or do we have to look at other things in terms of creating an infrastructure of education, jobs, and opportunities? So I think it's an interesting couple of days that will give people, and we're trying to set it up as much as possible that it isn't just folks in sessions being spoken to, but also having lots of free time to go off and talk about their particular projects. And what we're really wanting to encourage, and I think it's always one of the great things that comes out of conferences, is those happenstance discussions where two people happen to meet either at a break or at lunch or at another discussion. And have a chance to talk about their work and maybe come up with a solution that they hadn't even thought about or hadn't even come to the conference thinking about. So it's going to be a very exciting conference in the terms of just providing opportunities for people to come together, ask their questions, listen, learn, and share.
Will there be any product demonstrations or anything? I mean, are you going to have exhibits, or is this a totally a gab session and a good one, as you describe, because as people get together and share ideas, you're right, that can be a real hotbed of coming up with solutions. But tell us a little bit about the parts of the conference and the days, when it's being held and where. We know it's in Seattle, but it's presumed it's at a hotel. And would you give us the website, because I know that if people want to register, that's probably the place they're going to need to go to do, and this is a pretty exciting thing, Paul.
It is. The conference will start on Sunday, October 30th, mm-hmm. and run through Tuesday, November 1st. It'll be at the Renaissance Hotel in downtown Seattle. On Sunday, what we'll be doing is several tutorials. We have several organizations that are involved in power, and also some folks from the Hunger Project coming in and talking about some of the activities they have going on. These tutorials are really meant to do a couple of things. They'll provide information for folks from non-government organizations that might be looking for some solutions, but there'll also be an opportunity for people who say, I have a background in this particular area and I'd like to get involved, to learn how to get involved. And so that'll be Sunday afternoon, and there'll be a reception Sunday evening, giving attendees a chance to really start the whole networking and meeting the other attendees. The conference will then run over Monday and Tuesday, running through sessions and lots of interesting discussions. There'll be a Monday night dinner. We're working with the folks from Engineers Without Borders to be involved in their Monday night dinner. And again, it'll be an opportunity for people to interact and talk. We are offering some tours on Wednesday, November 2nd. The folks at PATH, which is a very large medical research operation here in Seattle, have offered up a tour, and we're also talking to the folks at the Gates Foundation about their new facility and possibly getting into the visitor center. And the website for the conference is www.ieeeghtc.org, and there's all the information on the program, the registration. We will have exhibitors there. The exhibitors will be kind of a combination of folks and organizations such as Engineers Without Borders, IEEE, talking about some of the activities that we have going on. But we'll also have some folks coming in who are from industry who are developing solar-powered refrigerators for vaccine storage. So they'll be in talking about some of their products that are going on. A couple of website developers that are coming on trying to create communities where people work on projects, not just around the world, but also even just in their local community. So I think what we're hoping is these discussions started, even some of the solutions that are being developed and maybe talked about for developing emerging nations might actually work very well in some parts of a developed nation like the U.S. I've talked to folks in Alaska who said some of their isolated communities would love some of the things that are in development because they go through winters very isolated and sometimes summers very isolated
sure.
without roads
yeah.
For access into their communities.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the website's www.ieeeghtc.org, and we're looking forward to having people in Seattle this fall.
Well, that's the GHTC stands for Global Humanitarian Technology Conference. And it's exciting to hear you talk about these things. And it's funny, we've all heard of Doctors Without Borders, but I didn't know, and I should know, but I didn't know that there's an Engineers Without Borders. How long has that been in existence, and are you part of that? What does that do?
So Engineers Without Borders is a standalone organization from IEEE.
Oh, really?
It's its own entity. I'm not sure how long. It's been around probably 5 years or more.
Oh, wow.
And again, a lot of their initial work was in the civil area. Again, the whole question of bringing water to villages. How do we go about doing that? There's actually also a Scientists Without Borders organization. Again, the biologists, the chemists, and others who are involved.
Mm.
I think much like what the doctors do, engineers have realized there are a lot of needs in developing emerging nations that can only be fulfilled by technology and scientific solutions. And rather than getting caught up in the whole politics of should this organization do it or should this company or this university, that individuals got together and said with a common interest, let's go create these opportunities. And typically these are driven out of the academic community. You have a lot of students involved. But again, as I mentioned, you're seeing a lot of retirees from industry saying, now I want to go do good. And historically, maybe a lot of these folks,
wow.
especially out of the U.S.
Wow.
or the Peace Corps, are now using groups like Engineers Without Borders.
Oh, that's so cool.
Scientists Without Borders, or parts of IEEE that are involved in these areas. There's also a new organization called Engineering for Change, which is a joint partnership of IEEE, the American Society for Mechanical Engineers, and Engineers Without Borders, to try to develop an additional community to bring people together. And some of this is trying to prevent the duplication of effort. So you don't have four different groups trying to do the same thing. You really have one group with a much more focused effort and emphasis. And we're partnering with the folks from Engineers for Change, and their website is engineeringforchange.org. We're partnering with them on this conference to start the dialogue on the conversation on some of the topics that will be addressed at the GHTC in the fall on their website, so that as we select our authors and papers come in, what we'll be doing is trying to start a discussion there between the authors, but also we hope the whole community at large looking at the website, asking questions, so that when people get to the conference, there'll have already been discussions started. And we're looking at it being our post-conference discussion site, so that when people leave, they don't sit there and say, okay, that was great, now what do I do, or I want to follow up. This will be their opportunity and their place to do this.
What an exciting thing. I mean, there's a whole cadre of people out there working to solve the problems in third world countries, or developing countries, I guess we call them now, that few of us ever heard of before. And so this is really, really, really an exciting thing with your Global Humanitarian Technology Conference in Seattle, the very first one that you've had. And golly, you know, we really wish you luck on this thing and hope that it works well for you. Incidentally, before I let you get out of here. I noticed you've testified before Congress on topics as immigration reform, and I presume that has to do with the difficulties that we have with our southern border. Can you tell us, what you said when you testified before Congress?
Sure, and actually the discussions that I've been part of at Congress have actually not been involved with necessarily border security. They've been more involved with things such as the H-1B visa, the use of green cards, the encouraging of students, foreign students coming to the U.S. to study, to actually stay in the U.S. So the discussions have been more on, I'll call it, the highly skilled workforce that have been trained in the U.S. and how do we attract and retain these people in the U.S.
Yeah, because it's been very difficult, I understand. People come here and they get a great education, and then they can't stay, and they have to go back to their own country, and we've trained them and that sort of stuff, but we can't keep them. Is that what you're saying?
Well, and that's obviously been an ongoing discussion in terms of how do we utilize folks who've been trained here. And, you know, and obviously some of the world economic changes that we're seeing right now has changed a lot of the dynamics, and a lot of folks are actually returning to home countries, whether they're India or China, because they perceive opportunity differently than there is right now in the U.S. But that has been really the discussion for groups like IEEE USA in terms of where are we going in immigration reform when we look at highly trained, highly skilled people, and how do they impact, you know, they impact the universities, obviously, when they're there as a presence. How do they impact the workforce in the U.S. as we try to retain these people here?
Yeah, okay, fine. I did want to ask you about one thing, though. If you're going to bring power to areas where they need it for water or for other development, are you familiar with airborne wind turbines? These are turbines that are flown like a kite, and they're brought in on flatbed trucks. Is that all part of what's going on?
That's some of the discussion. There are groups looking at that. There are groups that are looking at building windmills. You know, these are the small ones. There are some great stories of folks who built their own windmills in Africa and other places.
Okay.
There's a great book called The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. And it's the story of a young man who saw a picture of a windmill and actually went out and built one in his village in Africa using a bicycle and other interesting parts. So there's some great engineering going on that we're actually trying to encourage folks to formalize it.
IEEE, we talk about a lot on this program, and people are probably saying, what is this IEEE? Some people that don't know. So can break it down for us. What does IEEE stand for? How about that?
Sure. The IEEE is the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. It has been around since 1884, and right now has just over 400,000 members around the world. Yeah, originally as an organization, people like Edison, Alexander Graham Bell were some of the initial folks who kind of brought people together. Whenever I'm asked about why a group like IEEE exists, to me there's three core reasons people came together. One was people with common interests. Two were people coming together to share their work. And also the third reason was people came together to share problems they're running into, technology issues and challenges, and it was an opportunity to share. And that's really kind of stayed the mission of IEEE, conferences and publications. It's still a gathering place for people with common interests in electrical, electronics, computer science. We've got people who are medical backgrounds who have now moved into technology and how that's applied in the medical world. So it's a very diverse organization providing lots of interesting opportunity and resources for people to advance their careers, advance their work in technology, create businesses, and in this case, come together and talk about how do we apply technology to humanitarian issues and challenges that people are facing.
All right, Paul, you've been wonderful. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. You too, bye-bye. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Socrates the philosopher, I have been convicted through want indeed, yet not of origin, but of audacity and impudence, and of the inclination to say such things to you as would have been most agreeable for you to hear, had I lamented and bewailed and done and said many other things unworthy of them. But I should much rather choose to die, having so defended myself, than to live in that way. But this is not difficult, O Athenians, to escape death. But it is much more difficult to avoid depravity, for it runs swifter than death. Meditate on this one truth, that to a good man, nothing is evil, neither while living, time, Dave.